All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Justice with Jax. This is episode 3. I am extremely pleased to introduce my colleague here, Charles Johnson, and at one point, co-defendant, we'll say. Yeah. And that is part of why we are doing this episode. So tell the people who you are, Charles.
My name is Charles Johnson. I grew up here in Colorado Springs, 24 years. Always been a community advocate. Our grandma basically put us around community our whole life, so it's bred it off into us, and we've continued that in our own way and fashion. I'm involved a lot with the Neighbors for Education, co-chair for that, so helping support public education, teachers, students, and families, and to be able to push the mantle forward for that for all students to be able to have a full education and value, I guess, in schools. I also help out with the Chinook Center volunteering for the food drives or any donation events that they have going on. I always want to support my local community in my area, so I think that's really where it's at. And also the Black Lives Matter protest in 2020, my brother and a couple other people that we know helped out at that event and kind of arranged people to come show out and kind of have a conversation about where can we go forward with the police brutality and the community.
Thank you, Charles. Well-rounded. There's a lot of things that you've been working on. Yeah. And so I appreciate you spending the time with me today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because as I mentioned, at one point we were co-defendants. Yeah. We know that the case, Armendariz versus Colorado Springs, which is part of what this podcast is about, centers on this moment, largely, the Housing Rights March 2021 that we were both at, but the story is bigger. So that's why we do this podcast, because there's so much story here that we can do quite a few episodes, maybe even more than one season. And so that's where I'm going to start. You know, some of what we were talking about is the idea that we need to give case updates, because ultimately this case is affecting a lot of people because it's a vehicle for these stories, right? Yeah. And Charles, that's some of your story, which is why, you know, we'll get into that today. But for now, I think the biggest updates to share with people is that, one, we're in U.S. District Court, right? It's a civil rights case represented by the American Civil Liberties Union of Colorado. So it's a process, right?
Yes, sure.
And one thing that's been weighing on me, to be honest, is that based on this process, it is full of paperwork, and one of the motions that's like on the table, let's say, is a motion to dismiss, meaning the case is essentially over with, right? Mm-hmm. That's still hanging out there. There hasn't been a date scheduled for like addressing that or anything of that nature. So that feels like, you know, I'm impatient, right?
Yeah, and, I would be too.
Right. Like, it is a weird thing to be working through, because at the same time, the other big update is that we mentioned on another episode that we got a new judge, so to speak. Mm. It's a U.S. District Court judge, Judge Cruz, C-R-E-W-S, Cruz, who's actually from Pueblo, interestingly. Mm. And if you look him up with judges of this level, usually they have a history of their body of work, right? Yeah. So it's important to be knowledgeable about that. And so this guy appointed by President Biden, right, recently. So that's how we got a new judge. And so he recently delivered another order, so to speak. And what has been so interesting, and here's where I'll make the caveat, I'm not a lawyer, but I sort of play one on TV, just play along with me, is the idea of we're trying to explain this complicated legal system stuff to the community, because everybody deserves to know, because in a lot of ways we're doing this in the name of community, because it impacted so many. And so now with Judge Cruz, we are analyzing what's called really part of the qualified immunity question that applies to this case. And feel free to jump in, Charles. I know, you know, we have political talks, but essentially the way I look at qualified immunity is a legal concept that, especially at the federal level, basically law enforcement has used to kind of hide behind to deny accountability for their actions, you know? Yeah. And so what's happening right now, because we're actually, today is March 15th, and we're 228 days since the case was last filed, the attorneys will be submitting briefs on this qualified immunity question, which is them arguing back and forth, right? Court. their due date is March 18th. So that'll be happening soon. So that'll be more interesting things to read for us, basically. And some of this, right, not all of this, some of this is in the public record, like Judge Cruz saying, like, okay, we're going to use this case to analyze basically what standard applies here, whether this case meets it for this qualified immunity stuff. And so that is the latest that, without trying to get too complicated and making it relatable, I'd love to hear what some of your thoughts have been on seeing this case play out so far.
Well, I think it's something that needs to happen because the city needs to be held accountable for the actions that they do to citizens of this community and this city. And like you were saying earlier, like, it's a power dynamic. That's how I personally see it, with the way they're trying to elongate this case to try to prove a point and not hold their own police officers accountable. Because the day of that march, it was honestly a normal day. It was they were celebrating the 150th, I guess, anniversary of the city,
and
we were pretty much there, you know, to protest the human rights of housing, you know, and help out the homeless people here in
which is
community.
Something Joe Biden says now, right? Like, the president of the United States is saying housing is a human right. So
well, we know our city's not very fond of housing first here in the community, and even though we have a new mayor here that could honestly put a forefront stance on housing first and actually helping our community. But that's another conversation, a long shot, that will definitely need people to pressure him on. But I think with this case here, I think, like I said, it's a power dynamic thing for them, for CSPD, to say that we can pretty much do whatever we want, but also hold our own selves accountable without getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. We've seen too many case laws back and forth, probably for years on end, with CSPD being able to get off scot-free and not be charged. I mean, you can even look up in Denver with those officers. They're barely charged 5 years for killing Elijah McClain. That was just trying to walk home. And just to see that they get a lesser sentence for killing someone and injecting ketamine into somebody, and I think it's upsetting that they give them a slap on the wrist, pretty much. And I know right now the city's goal is to recruit more officers to be involved and to be on the streets, which I think is the last thing we should be trying to do with solving public safety, because they always say public safety is more than just an officer, but yet all we hear is law enforcement. Yeah, and so it's something that I think they need to, with this case, I think it's something that they need to relook at, of what actually is public safety when you're harming your own citizens that
violating
pay taxpayer dollars.
Their constitutional rights.
Yeah, that as well. And even the court systems as well, elongating people's cases just because you know there's
that.
No evidence.
Right? Let's talk about that, because that's another important part of you being part of this story for me. And it's something that we mentioned, is like, in total there were six of us arrested, and how I've chosen to kind of bring our conversations together is kind of in the order that I remember people being arrested. And so you were arrested that day at the Housing Rights March, and I think what is important to say for you, and I would love if you share, is what we've mentioned before, is that this story goes way farther back. It goes back to 2019, and you were one of the people in this community that CSPD, the 4th Judicial District, they were complicit together in prosecuting you for really what your political speech was and your political organizing. So, like, take it away, Charles. Here's why.
It actually does go all the way back to 2019, because I think our very first involvement with CSPD and the whole judicial system of protesting, I think it was back when Donald Trump actually came here to the World Arena. And obviously there was people on both sides that were for Trump and against, and obviously we were against during the time that he was here, and they were holding a protest rally outside.
I
and
feel like that was like February 2019-ish.
And so obviously it was snowing at that time, so people were still out there. They didn't care. And especially if you're Carl Native, you don't care for the snow, especially if it's an important cause. And so just being involved in that, it was very interesting to see that the atmosphere was very, I wouldn't say tense, but it was just very high in emotion with the political time that it was at that moment.
And that hasn't really slowed down.
Yeah, no, it hasn't. And knowing us, we definitely like to challenge the system and hold it accountable for what it is. And obviously they don't like stuff like that. So when we got arrested, I guess, for that first time, it was very interesting to see how they, I guess, handled that situation, because we never really knew what it was like to be, I guess, arrested for a protest or be involved in that. And so,
and the things that you were, quote unquote, accused of, right? Because when you're arrested, you're being accused of a crime. These were like very minor municipal, like, ordinance violations. Is that right?
And even here with the housing march, there's it's very interesting, because I remember the officer, when the whole housing march happened, the officer came up to me. I didn't know he was talking to me specifically. He was like, hey, if you do anything today, you're going to be arrested. And like, I was asking him physically, I was like, are you talking to me? Because obviously there's other people around protesting. And I wanted to make sure that he was telling me that, not anybody else that was behind or on the side of me. And so I didn't assume anything. I thought he was just saying that to people to, I guess, calm people down, even though we were on the sidewalk the whole time, saying that we were in the street and disobeying the law, which I think is unacceptable for them to accuse
people of. They basically made that up. Yeah. Like, the police over and over said it was illegal protesting, and that's a lie. There is a standard, like a legal standard to determine that, and our protest does.
Yeah, and a public walkway is not illegal to stand on or be near. And so I thought that was very interesting. And as the housing march, I guess, kept going, you know, people were just chanting that housing is a human right and just, you know, waving their flag for whatever they believe in and things like that. And we were trying to march our way up to an abandoned building. We were going to help distribute more foods and blankets and clothing goods for the unhoused people.
Which Chinook Center regularly does.
Which they regularly do at the Chinook Center. So shout out to Chinook Center for doing the great things that they do. And so with that, it was very interesting. And when they first went to go get John Christiansen, when he was on his cart.
Episode two.
When he was riding with his cart, I just thought it was very interesting how they physically came at him and just grabbed him out of everyone that was there. You could have stopped anybody.
It was clear
anybody.
They had been, they knew who they were calling
And like I said, the officer said, if you do something, you will be a person that will be arrested. And like I said, I didn't understand who he was referring that to.
Yeah.
They, like I said, they went to go get John, and then Sean. Sean was first. That was an interesting trip, honestly, because it took about eight officers just to
hold him down.
And it's a great photo, cover photo that he has of them trying to take him down. I think it's historical. It needs to be put up in the Pioneers Museum. Honestly,
there you go. I think we can start a petition. Put that in the Pioneers Museum.
I think that's something, especially with us being there. Promising. I think that's another voucher of something for Black history. I think that should be involved. And then in the movement.
Well said.
And with all that going on, it was just a very hectic moment when we were just trying to help care for our community. And you know, John and Sean are getting ruffled around by police, and I'm just trying to make sure everybody else is going forward. And I'm trying to talk to an officer asking what's going on. Why are you harassing these people and beating them and putting them on the ground? And next thing I know, that same officer that asked me, hey, if you do something, you're going to be arrested, comes out of nowhere saying, I told you not to do this, now I'm going to arrest you. He came, he grabbed me. And when you grab someone, you try to resist because you don't know what's going on. You don't
want to. It's a reaction.
And so that reaction turned him saying, you need to get on the ground. And when he tried grabbing me, I tried pulling away. And my friend Alex Archuleta tried coming in to help. And that's when you've seen two more officers in riot gear with the.
All of them were in riot gear.
And they had the knuckle gloves on. And all I seen was them swing across my shoulder and hit him. And they told me to get on the ground.
I didn't realize about the gloves.
Yeah. Mm. And all you could see is them holding like the mace and a taser saying, stay on the ground now. Mm. And as they were separating everybody and getting them to the squad cars, that same officer came up to me and was like, why did you wild us up like that? Why did you stir the pot like that? And I was just like, for what? Like, what did I do to upset you guys? You guys came at us. Literally, we were just walking on a public sidewalk and street that's legal to do as a citizen here.
That's one of the sensations from that day is that it's basically that they came very aggressively at us. And then when people reacted naturally to being approached aggressively, they blamed us.
Yeah. No, honestly, and it was interesting, too, because once I got into the cop car, the officer was like, well, I'm going to try to lower the charges, because if I was to say you hit the officer, you would be going to jail.
So
I
want
to do the right thing and make sure that you learn your lesson and not go to jail. And interesting with that, obviously, I got a court case summons after being released. And about a week or two so after, when I had to go back to the municipal court, I see John and Sean actually going in there for their court case. And I see a bunch of officers in undercover cars and their SUV trucks. And I see him pinned up against the wall. He's hanging outside, like if they're waiting for someone. And I see the guy. I recognize the officer that I seen there. And I was like, I'm curious of why he's standing there like that. And he's letting everybody go in. And I knew inside that, oh, they're going to try to come arrest me again. And obviously, when I walked up there, they're like, are you Charles Johnson? We have more charges against you, I guess, of harassing an officer and impeding public traffic. And so,
I did not
obviously, it was a bigger scene because my brother was there. And, you know, that's a lot of emotions are high at that time. So I was like, just do what you have to do. Just take me over there, you know, get this out the way. Because I knew there was no legal cause for them to actually arrest me and say that I did those things and try to prove
but
it in court.
That also put you in district court.
Oh, yeah.
So here's a feature, right? It's not a broken system, like it's functioning by design. A feature of it is now you were stacking with cases in municipal court and district court, and just how disruptive that is to your life. And look at how they chose to arrest you. I remember in my case just thinking, it's like, damn, you could have called me. Like, I would have showed up to the police station. Like, I'm not gonna abscond.
Well, and their tactics were very interesting, because I know there was another time before the courthouse of when they arrested for the Pulpit Rock march there, they used an undercover
And you know what? I'm going to be real with you. Can I say for a second? When we call it Pulpit Rock, I prefer to call it the Sergeant Van Lant protest,
that's the
right?
truth of this story, honestly.
Yeah. And did you notice? Did you notice when the police wanted to talk about it and again lie and declare it an illegal riot, they call it the Pulpit Rock protest? Yeah. We were not protesting Pulpit Rock.
Because that's what they used to find all the evidence on me.
Social media?
Yeah, literally social media. So I'm just like,
same.
Because I know a lot of other people have been involved in the movement for a while. It's so like they kind of have a history with CSPD and stuff like that. And for me, not saying I don't now. Obviously, I do.
We both do now.
Yeah, both do. And so now, going into that, it was just very interesting. Being very young, I mean, I still am young, but at that time,
you said you're 24.
Not knowing really like what to expect, I guess, with that, because you see it on movies and you say, "Oh, that will never happen here," or that situation can never happen to me, and then, lo and behold, it happens, and now you kind of have to face the reality of it. And like you were saying, it was definitely challenging going back and forth with school, work, and also trying to complete all the requirements, I guess, that the city wants you to be able to be a good citizen and comply with their laws. And it was very interesting enough. Obviously, it's a 2-year probation. I have 4 months left until I'm completely expunged.
You're still on probation.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Unfortunately, I still am. And so 3 months into that process, I finished the class, the requirements of community service within 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I think within 6, I paid off the
It was a Front Range.
Yeah, it was like Front Range.
They're a little side industry that this whole system helps others kind of like make some cash, you know what I mean? Because they manage like the community service supervision, and there's only one that serves our entire judicial district, which has more than one county. I didn't Google it or anything.
And interesting enough with that, like with the conditions that they made you do within community service, at least for me, I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. For people that are on probation, have felonies and high misdemeanors. As you know, we have the HOT team here for the Homeless Outreach Task Force, and they go out and they boot people out of their own camps and take their belongings, things like that. They won't tell a lot of people, but they had us at the time during all
people
that stuff
on
that was
probation.
Probation, cleaning up other people's encampments and taking away their stuff.
Did they at least give you proper gear?
Well, they gave us gloves to wear, and like, I guess you wear your boots or whatever.
Oh, because
you have.
Like waste and all that type of stuff.
Yeah. And the only thing that the managers of that facility handled was the waste that was there, because obviously we weren't able to pick that stuff up. But anything else that we found, just use your hands with the gloves, or if you have like a clamper or something,
not
like that,
pick
it up.
Oh, bring your own picker.
Yeah, well, the ones that they had, and they weren't the best, honestly.
Gotcha.
And so it was very, honestly, inhumane to see that perspective of people that are on probation to take someone else's belongings, and for the offer to say, isn't this better than being inside of a cell? I was like, no, I don't think this is equivalent to anything better than that.
I'm not okay with either one.
And I think since then, I don't know if they disbanded that from being a community service requirement, but I'm pretty sure they did. I hope they did, because that's inhumane to make somebody else do that to someone else, and that could be them next for all we know.
Many of us are one bad incident away from being without housing. We all know that in today's America, really.
Yeah, and so it's definitely been a long haul, and then for them to stretch it out for 2 years to not
I'm honestly mad about that, dude. Yeah. I literally had no idea.
And I had to show up every day, and why the victim, I guess, was on vacation with his family. And
the victim officer?
Not the officer, the person that complained about it.
Oh, gosh. This is from the 2019 or no, it was the 2020 Sergeant Van Lant protest. Yeah. See, because just for the audience at home, there's a few charges that you faced.
And they all tied in with one another.
They all stacked up. They all tied in with one another and with your political organizing.
Yeah, there's a total of seven charges, actually, that they put together, whether it be felony or misdemeanors. So seven total. And especially with the housing one, the most interesting about that case is that they tried to get assault on the officer, which I thought was very interesting. See, that's always like the
victim
officer,
because in my case, there was a victim officer.
And I don't think the officer ever showed up.
Well, he's another black man. Can I just be real about like how messed up that situation was? Yeah. Because some people identified, like, police have their tactics, and there were other protesters taking video that day, and the fact of basically what CSPD, it seemed like they did to do to you, and tell me what you think, but they took a black officer, got him to talk to another black man, distract you, basically, and then a white officer is the one who came up behind you and grabbed you, which anyone being grabbed from behind would react.
Would react or try to resist away from someone trying to grab them. So I definitely agree on that, and that's definitely kind of how it felt, because I knew with him, it was more of a genuine conversation. I know he wants to understand, like, what's, like, he wants to, unfortunately, like to say they want to be the important cause to the help, but obviously it's a longer road than just being a person that looks like me to be able to stand in the front line and say, hey, I'm here to help. Because I mean, even in other states in the South, they get accused for a lot of killings of our own people, and so there's a lot of accountability for that as well. And like you said, for him to sit up there and say, well, you're going to be the person I have to arrest, and then come after the fact that you're getting other people why it's going on, like, it's definitely a target. And then for you to show up 3 weeks later at the courthouse to let the people that you targeted go in, but I can't, and you arrest me right at the front door. Yeah. And the thing is, my lawyer, they were sending a message,
like, that's not subtle.
And they didn't tell my lawyer until they got right to the door, and she was there the whole time before I got there.
What was her name again?
Allison Blackwell.
Shout out to Allison.
She's a great lawyer. I think she does a lot of great work to help people.
To get what they need
to get justice done. And I think she's been a big advocate for that whole 2 years going on, even till now. I mean, I still stay in contact with her. She asks how I'm doing and everything like that.
A good lawyer. Yeah. What a world of difference that can make, right?
No, honestly, a lawyer that actually cares and makes sure that you're staying on the arrow path that they believe you can be on, you know. And it's definitely been a long journey still going through it. You know, I still definitely now have skepticality of our law enforcement and the transparency of our judicial system, because honestly, you've seen it go wrong.
Yeah,
and I've never really been arrested for crimes outside of protest, and like that was my first time ever being involved in the system like that, because I've always told myself,
same.
I was like, I don't ever want to be involved in that, and like no matter what it is, and I guess protesting is what got me into it, which I don't believe is a bad thing. It's definitely unfair, but I think it's for the right cause to get in trouble. Honestly, I think that's...
Did you know I have good trouble tattooed on me? And I say that literally, actually, quite literally. And it was a part of going through this case.
Yeah.
And just, like, really deeply embracing that. Yeah. Which is why I feel like we are connected. And it's something we've talked about in the other episodes, that, like, this happening was so disruptive. And, like, dramatic, but we had each other.
Yeah.
And that was actually really important.
Yeah.
Not only important to us as humans, but important to actually getting to this point where we could fight back in court and demand accountability with this case. And I hope maybe something we could talk about, how this really goes back to 2019. And it's something that is honestly heavy, which is that we've mentioned it on the podcast, but a lot of the organizing at the grassroots community level for Colorado Springs, there was really a catalyst in 2019 when CSPD murdered Devon Bailey.
Yeah. Yeah, so with that situation of Devon being killed, it actually happened right around the corner from my house, and my good friend Lauren Stoker was also involved in that situation, being his cousin and a bystander with him at that moment in time. And obviously a lot of people have their speculations of the situation, whether you knew Devon personally or you are watching the news and seeing what they're reporting and making your own assumptions. There's always two sides to the story once you actually look into it. And going through that journey with Lawrence and knowing Devon's family growing up, because Devon's dad actually worked at the corner store up the street from our house, and so we'd visit him all the time. And his uncle was our football coach in middle school, so we grew up with his uncle all the time, like going to football practice and at games and stuff. And we still stay in contact with all of them till this day and things like that. And just going through that situation, especially at a young age, because he was only 19, I think, at that time, and Lawrence was barely 18. And so being only like young teenagers going through that situation of watching your own cousin be killed by an officer and not knowing how to react or what to do.
Shot in the back multiple times, which is... Yeah.
And why kids were outside playing and at the park, I think it was unjustified for them to say that it was okay for them to shoot him in the back and that the officer gets a slap on the wrist and gets promotion pretty much at that point.
And an ugly thing about that too was that really the way that our laws were at the time, like, allowed it.
Yeah, no, honestly. And then now they
changed the law.
Yeah, there's a certain Senate bill now I know that they passed for officers that you can't
shoot. Accountability bill?
Yeah,
oh, no, I think it might be there's a couple of different bills that Colorado's worked on. So I don't know if it's part of SB 217, mm-hmm. which is one of the ones that applies to this case.
Yeah.
But you may be even talking about another law, I think, that they passed, because it has to do more specifically with the language around, right? Is that what you're talking about? Around
I don't think I've heard of that one.
Okay. But. Okay, there's a few out there, a few different bills.
Yeah, no, and they all play their part within this, and I think it's that's one form, you know, of accountability is writing the laws and being able to justify actually what's accountability towards
an
officer and
going to court.
System.
And testing those laws, applying those laws.
That's another big thing as well. I think that's something that definitely needs to be focused on is the judicial system, because one thing that I saw during this whole entire from 2019 till now is that they were very selective of who they would release off of certain court cases and who they would keep on elongate. And obviously, it's the more active people that are involved in wanting to help build the community that they keep on there longer. But there was other people that were involved in Black Lives Matter, the housing march, stuff like that, that also got charged. But yet, they got their charges dropped within 2 weeks. And it's like, how was that possible? But yet, there's other people that are still paying out money to the, I guess, probation and to court fees and being have to be at court early in the morning to get off of work, just not be able to provide for yourself, but you have to provide for them to pay off what their tuition is that you caused in their ideal and way of thinking, I guess. And so it takes a toll on a lot of people, regardless of what the situation is. I think there's other ways that you could justify and actually help people. Like with me, I know one of the classes, I had to take a cognitive skills class to help my anger, because I guess that's what caused a lot of this stuff.
The way
I think and I guess the way I react to the officers caused them to say, hey, he needs to take a behavioral health class. And so with that, obviously, it was actually a very humbling moment, honestly, to kind of be a part of a session like that, because it wasn't just people, I guess, that have behavioral issues or people that have substance abuse and things like that. And kind of just hear the perspective of like what got them here obviously was the court system and the police, and just to hear that how they're basically kind of stuck there because they don't have any financial support or people that are willing to help them and be involved, or they don't have any resources to connections to be able to be involved in that, and just to see how it basically trickles them down to basically stay in that same form or basically keep that same pattern mindset just so they can keep doing the same things that they do.
The recidivism that we see with these systems, right? And I think it's something we talked about, Sean and I, as well as just like, again, the system is functioning the way largely that it was designed.
It's 100%.
It's not so much rehabilitative in many cases. It's punitive, it punishes you, and then it just gets you further down the rabbit hole, because in some cases, if you've been incarcerated, well, then maybe you lost your job because you couldn't show up to work, and then you lost your way to pay your rent, so you lost your housing, and it just goes and it goes, and that's I think that's another thing we've talked about with this podcast, is like naming those truths, those hard truths, that in this community especially, really, it seems like there's some of us that's been criminalized because we're willing to speak very publicly to that effect, you know?
And I also would say, too, like with the public officials themselves, of holding them accountable, because some won't even, you know, I guess, back the community knowing that what the police are doing is wrong and that they should be able to, you know, say, hey, what you're doing is not okay, and that we need to actually implement these laws and actually be able to say, like, this is what a police force should be, of public service, not of public brutality against your own citizens. And just to even see the lawsuits that Colorado Springs is getting itself, not even just from CSPD, but from the city itself, and how many lawsuits they have to pay out. Like, I know right now there's a gentleman that, I guess, that had the El Paso County Sheriff's involved with a killing of a man with a mental illness report that came in there. And there's reporting officers from all different counties that came in. El Paso was one of them, and ended up killing the man while in distress. And so now the family's doing a federal lawsuit. And I don't think a lot of people were talking about that and about how big this, because this is a federal lawsuit that they're putting against him.
Just like ours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like
U.S. District Court.
Like, it's truly important to like show and see that like that there needs to be some type of accountability or reparations for the community that's getting brutalized by people that say they're supposed to serve the public community. And
I feel like it's been, there's many things that have been heavy to carry. And one of them, I think, as you're talking, I think about, I feel like it's been hard for me that CSPD and just, of course, the FBI is, this is what law enforcement is like. It's not like they're ever going to say, we're sorry. It's, they have this strange mentality to me that I've seen. Like, that's why I'm not afraid to be quoted by calling them arrogant bullies with badges and guns, because like, I don't hear a humbleness about how can we do better. I hear a facade of, we talk to the community, but without admitting, like, hey, there was this body cam that came from our case where one of our officers was saying that they wanted to put a boot to someone's face. Sorry for that. That is wrong. That's not okay. And I think the chief sort of kind of went that direction, but I just remember reading a comment that our current police chief had about that, and it just felt so hollow. Do you have some thoughts around that as well?
Well, knowing him, like they say, he's doing his job, I guess, in that sense. But it's unfortunate that he doesn't want to, I guess, hold his own, I guess, team accountable for what they're doing. Because I know there was a report coming about morale within CSPD. I know it said it's very low.
The show is not contributing to CSPD.
And when you question that, you obviously would ask, like, yeah, you're not retaining the right type of candidates, but also who's in your leadership and who's the one that's given the commands of saying that you need to
take these people.
Yeah. And I've kind of been saying it for a while that it's always been a leadership problem. It's never, I mean, you could say it's the officer because all the officers make mistakes, but it's the leadership that's showing you what to do and how to be
that does tend to trickle down in the city.
And I guess the way he's been running it hasn't, obviously it's caused multiple lawsuits within the city, and yet nothing's really came forth with them saying, yeah, we're going to do the right thing the next time. And it's just lawsuit after lawsuit, and it's like they never learned their lesson, you know. And
it seems like it.
And I think that's a big thing that people really need to question, is the morale of like the leadership outside of just the officers themselves too, because that's who's calling the shots, is the sergeants and the people that are the executives. So
yeah, definitely that's a piece of accountability, right? Yeah. Looking at the leaders as well. And I mean, I think of it maybe even a step further, is like, we see headlines occasionally. Now I feel like maybe more and more that, oh, police, they can't fill their ranks. They just can't hire people. And it's like, well, that's people telling you they don't want to be a part of this faulty system that you perpetuate. So, like, what do you do if you can't hire officers?
Well, and public safety is more than just policing. Like we have people that are going to school to be doctors, nurses, RNs, and social health workers, social workers, and things like that. And it's like, what are we doing to help them to be able to get in the field to actually help people with mental health illness? Because they say that's the biggest thing for my generation is mental health. But yet, we haven't done one thing yet to actually say, what can we do to help?
Doesn't something more tangible than what we have right now, you think?
Yeah, no, honestly. And I think, like, well, I don't know if a lot of people know now, is that they're trying to build the police academy here to recruit more officers.
Right, just because 2A was defeated and taxpayers said, hell no, you can't have our money, that doesn't mean that stopped the project, really, right?
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. And I think also, outside of people just saying no, I think we need to still keep going at them, telling them that, like, hey, like, just because we voted no for 4.75 doesn't mean we still want this facility here.
Right,
like, it's
right.
Like, it's more to public safety than just police officers and having them on our streets, because it's not always the incident that a police officer is needed. It's usually mental health and distress or drug abuse. Someone that can just, they just need someone there to care for them. Mm-hmm. They need someone there to harass them or pull a gun
out on
them.
Criminalize them for the worst day of their life, possibly,
yeah,
right?
Literally, or be the last time they can ever see someone or say something. All they're trying to ask for is help.
Yeah.
And their first solution is to either open up a gun or a taser and deploy it at somebody, and that usually ends up either with someone in the hospital or dead.
Yeah.
And that's not the way to, I guess, attack public safety and wanting your citizens to feel safe and be able to know that they have someone that could be there, even though I believe the community has always been there to help each other regardless of what the situation
is. We've had the benefit of experiencing that. And that's what I love about being able to have this space to talk about that too. And I think we'll definitely get there in a moment. But I think as I listen to you talk too, I mean, I think that the work that we do, and I would love to hear your take on this, is there's this scary sensation of like, well, if we can't hire cops, then like we're not safe. And it's like, whoa, pump the brakes. Actually, you can think about it differently. And the work that we do, I really do think about it as trying to address the root causes of crime. Yeah. And Sean and I touched on it. It's like it can be a money thing too, right?
Yeah.
Because if police are just reacting to crime and just they're perpetuating, making sure their coffers are stable or increasing because they're always reacting to crime.
Yeah.
But what kind of difference can we make if we try to stop it from the get-go because people have stable housing or they have access to food and quality health care, including mental health care? What do you think about that concept of we are trying to address the root causes of crime, and you know what? If that makes police obsolete, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important. I think we need to look, like I said, it's more than just a police academy, a big building to help say that's how we're going to stop police, stop crime, and also bring community and police together. And I think
did you see that weird picture of them in a shower for the 2A campaign?
Yeah. I thought it was
everybody
very
go
weird.
Google that.
I thought the whole presentation was just off. And now they're hesitating to say we can't find a place, we're looking around. But yet a lot of people don't know is that they came with 15 different options, also with money deals as well, to how to fluctuate that, whether it be for a new building or if they rent out something. They had 15 different options, but yet they didn't disclose one at all.
Mm.
And now they're saying that they're starting to look at buildings and open land, which we all know it's obviously going
to
be built on
trying
open
to go
land.
The more expensive route of building it from scratch.
Because they want a new shiny building to attract and to be able to say where the nice new academy that you need to come to, which I think is the last thing we could do. Because I told them all they could do is expand out the building next door, and that would cost less money from the city and taxpayers.
Probably, because it's such a nondescript location, and it's in our neighborhood, Southeast.
Yeah, Southeast. And that's also going to say, too, is like you were saying, implementing more mental health cares and like hospitals and like more like food to power, like grocery stores and smaller markets, I think is something that's definitely needed in that area, because that area is the most, I would say, the most targeted area within CSPD and El Paso County Sheriff's within the whole city. I know there's...
Wait, you don't say the most black and brown neighborhood in Colorado Springs is the most policed neighborhood? Charles, tell me more.
Well, it's very interesting. I know a lot of people that grew up in the Southeast obviously understand that we have Sand Creek Division Precinct there in the Southeast.
They're brand new. They're other brand newish building.
A brand
new
facility.
Yeah.
And we also know that it was a very high, I guess, gang unit population at one point in time in the Southeast. So they're very horrendous around harassing a lot of minorities, whether you're involved in stuff like that or not. And
it's not like we're not denying there's gangs in the neighborhood. Like, we're not saying
there's
that.
There's gangs everywhere. Whether they're good or bad, it doesn't mean you have to harass them or accuse people of being...
And manufacture crimes or try to entrap them and all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now one of our biggest things, we're getting a lot of homeless camps out back now in our neighborhood, which obviously I think it would be best if we could build more shelters there to actually be able to house them, because it's open field there. You can be able to build actual affordable housing, be able to have the amenities for clothing and warmth and food and things like that.
Yeah.
But like I said, some of our public officials don't want to actually hold accountability to their police officers and actually see that there needs to be change outside of just a police and a badge. Like, mm-hmm. It needs to be
a shifting mindset, right? Yeah. Like changing the paradigm, which is hard, but this most recently we had a huge really paradigm shift for Colorado Springs in that we had our first elected Black mayor, right? And so do you think that is something that we can work with, basically? is that a pointed question?
Yeah, kind of, I guess. I mean, because I won't lie and say I wasn't for him at first, because obviously I want to see a person that looks like me be in a higher office to be able to lead and be involved and build a better community for other people that look like him and that are involved in his situation.
But then he immediately proposed 2A.
Yeah, and the 2A is what kind of threw me off a little bit, because I know his biggest mission is for his kids' safety and their future, which I understand is important because I want my future for myself and whoever I have kids for.
We want to feel safe,
to be able to have a life to live and be able to call Colorado home, that we've been here for 24 years and forever long they want to live here. But for him to say that those officers will protect his kids, because they look just like him, and for him to have two sons and a daughter, it's not the best scenario for them.
Maybe I guess he's here. Not being realistic.
No, I unfortunately don't think he is, when actually looking at the lawsuits that have came from CSPD, most of them being minorities within those incidents, and getting those lawsuits that really didn't get far, too much money out of it, because they didn't think it was a waste of their time to spend money on and actually justify what those officers did. And I'm hoping him as the mayor actually sees the accountability that needs to be done for CSPD, because he's seen
the jury's out there. Can't tell.
Because he's seen the report already about the morale and leadership. He's obviously gotten back the reports of, I guess, police brutality crime here in Colorado Springs by officers, whether it be by a gun, a taser, brutally, physically hitting someone and beating them. And obviously all the evidence is there to show that the officers aren't capable of doing their job, which is to protect and serve. And for them to say that a $40+ million facility is going to help recruit and train better officers, I think that's the last thing that you should tell someone, especially knowing that a lot of taxpayers here don't like millions and millions of dollars being spent on stuff that is
we must
necessary.
Be fiscally irresponsible. Is that what you're saying?
Now that we say that, it was funny. I was watching a State of the City Hall, I guess, town session that David Lineweber and Brian Risley were doing. They're doing a couple more actually coming up.
I think they saw those advertised.
I was watching the YouTube video last night that someone was recording from it, and they were talking about the 2A initiative and, hey, we've seen that people voted no on this ballot initiative for 4.75, which was true. A lot of people voted no. We won that ballot initiative. And he was saying, well, with them voting no, doesn't that mean that people don't want the facility? And obviously, the city council stops them there and says, no, people want the facility. They want officers to be involved. But yet, I think the answer from them saying no for money obviously also shows that you don't want to pay the officers more to be able to protect and serve. And they're saying, well, we're already looking at places that we can put down for a facility and be able to expand. And it's like, are you asking people where this is going to be put at? How is it going to affect people's community and livelihoods, and doing all those trainings and stuff, keeping people up at night? Like, that's something that I don't think would reflect well within the city, and just traumatizing people.
That's the biggest thing. I think for the both of us, and feel free to tell me otherwise, but I know for me, a new police training academy does not make me feel safer.
Yeah, no, I think that's the last thing to be able to build here, at least to say that's something that's going to recruit more people to come to the city to become officers,
to become bullies with badges and guns.
And
no thanks.
So I think that's the last thing that we should do. I think with that money that we said no to, that we kept, I think we should invest more into, like you were saying, mental health institutions, more hospitals. I mean, the Southeast
only has housing. Go figure.
Oh, the housing.
I was at that housing breakdown.
Yeah, that's definitely something that's needed here for sure, especially because they always talk about what can we do to get our 18 to 34-year-olds to stay here for our future, and yet housing is a big issue, and yet they say public safety is our number one cause. But yet every time you go to a meeting or someone
and
comes up,
housing stability does contribute to safety.
Yeah. It truly does, and I think they don't want to see that bigger picture, at least hold it accountable.
It's that mindset shift, that paradigm shift, and I don't know. I would like to think that maybe Colorado Springs having a quote-unquote unaffiliated mayor is something we can work with, but clearly there's a lot going on.
The way he showed himself so far doesn't seem as unaffiliated, because I mean, I know a lot of people say you can be unaffiliated but also lean a certain way.
Definitely have a lean.
So I think he's definitely leaning more towards the fiscal conservative, just because obviously a 2A. He's a very big 2A supporter.
Sheriff Bill Elder endorsed him.
Yeah.
That really stuck out to me.
Yeah, and Sally Clark as well. I mean, a lot of people would underestimate that because she's been to Washington multiple times, and I think that's a key gem that he kept with him because he knows.
She's a former federal level official as well as a county commissioner, right?
Yeah.
And when they were neck and neck, for her to give Yemi the endorsement was a very big deal.
Yeah, and I think that's what shifted a lot of perspective, because what I'm seeing right now in a lot of these races is that Republicans are relying on their unaffiliated friends to try to go vote because they know their party doesn't have people to put them in there. We obviously seen that with all the Republicans trying to run for mayor. With him being unaffiliated, obviously he was the odd person out. So he made the difference between a lot of staunch Republicans.
He didn't have a political background, really, right? So there wasn't a record.
Well, he actually doesn't like the word politician, I've heard.
Oh, I didn't realize. So what is he, a public servant, servant leader?
I guess that's what he calls it now. But I see it, even though I don't like politics, I still see him as a politician, as a mayor.
That's the process. We are electing you to represent us, right? He's a young
governor,
right?
Pretty much. He's a young governor of the city of Colorado Springs. That's how I see it. And then city council is the wild Congress.
Okay, we're making
That's how I see our strong mayor.
I can appreciate that. Yeah, because that's another, just the nuance of systems, right? Where here in Colorado Springs, we have what's called like a strong mayor system, which can function differently from other like municipal government systems. And the name kind of implies strong mayor.
Yeah.
The power dynamics, right?
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting, too, because the mayor we had before was definitely very pro-law enforcement,
as a former Colorado Attorney General? Absolutely.
Yeah, he was definitely pro-police, pro-anything, public servant.
Pro-prison industrial complex, because as a GA, right, he took campaign money from GEO Corporation, which I wanted to research, right, based on my values. GeoCorp makes money off of black and brown bodies incarcerating immigrants, right? And so prison for profit is like a giant red flag as part of our system, right? So anyone who's taking campaign donations supporting that kind of system, that's a giant red flag to me.
Oh, 100%. I would agree with that too, honestly, because that's a big cause here in El Paso County and Colorado Springs. Even though we're the smallest rate within the demographic of Colorado Springs, we're still the most impacted when it comes to law enforcement and public servants and
people of color, right? Yeah. Like, we're not the majority in Colorado Springs, but when you look at how we are incarcerated or involved in the legal system, that there's not an equal ratio there.
And it definitely shows too as well, and I think it's something that we definitely need to look more into, especially, like I said, him being our first ever immigrant black mayor here in the city. I think he just needs to relook at the vision of what he thinks public safety looks like, especially for his future of his kids and the way.
I'm a big fan of reimagining public safety. We can do that. A better world is possible.
No, I definitely think so as well. And I think looking more into what this facility is going to intake, I guess, of recruiting officers, because they know that they want to basically fix up the technology to use the VR systems to simulate, I guess, real life crisis. I don't know how that's going to help an officer when the actual situation is going on. It's not going to be a virtual reality. It's real life when you're walking on the streets and seeing people that are going through tough situations and you're so-called there to help, but yet you flip the whole situation backwards.
Well, that's the thing that, I feel what you're touching on is the overall concept of, which is always, once I realized it, I was like, wait, what is that? When it comes to law enforcement budgets, they just go up and up and up.
Yeah.
Other departments get cuts in whatever kind of government, municipal, federal, whatever. But whether crime goes up or down, police budgets tend to go up.
Yeah. And I don't know if a lot of people know, but the mayor actually cut his own budget.
Oh, yeah.
From his own to give to the police for a 4% increase for entry-level officer, not a 10-year or a 20-year declared officer, for entry-level. So the first time you step on as an officer into that field, you'll get a 4% increase.
That's something that I've been seeing that's been another upsetting trend, frankly, on this topic, is that I think law enforcement agencies, especially at the municipal, are leveraging economic inequality.
Yeah.
And, incentivizing people to join the shitty system that people are already showing they don't want to be a part of by providing like housing, childcare, and other kinds of incentives.
Yeah.
And it's just like none of that is fair, really, ultimately. Yeah. So
no, it's definitely something. And even for my generation, I know a lot of people don't want to go into that field of, I mean, they want to be public servants and for public safety, but not as an officer.
What does public safety look like?
And it's, well, for my generation, it's definitely not an officer. It's more of the mental health and drug abuse help and housing and shelters and everything that everyday people go through, regardless of where your socioeconomic income is, your religion or anything like that. It's just helping people and being in your community. I think that's where the true public safety is. It's just being...
Right.
Being a neighbor, being a friend to someone that you don't know that needs help. And I think that's where it truly starts. But where they're going, I think, is only going to make it worse here in the city, especially as the population grows here in the city. And as it's getting more diverse, you're going to see a lot more situations. I mean, we can even talk about out east here in El Paso County with the ranchers out there that were getting harassed.
Huge story.
All because they came from the south where they were originally ranching out here to out east. Obviously, there's not many black ranchers out here in Colorado. And so for them to go through that whole situation or
with the sheriff's office.
Yeah, with the sheriff's office and just going getting harassed for all that stuff. And it just shows that like the system's still not in the fair share as people might make it seem. At least for a lot of privileged people, they would say that it's doing okay and that it's doing its job. But I think there's a lot more to question within public safety here. And even our judicial system, when you're charging people and holding people for charges that shouldn't even be there, honestly. Like, even like for a lot of mine, because I'm glad a lot of them got dropped, because I know the judge understood that a lot of these charges are bogus.
What a waste of taxpayer money, too. Look at what they put us through.
For 2 years straight, we had to waste other people's money, even my own, that I didn't obviously want to spend, but I had to because they said, well, you're under our law now, so now you have to go through our regulations. And still am. I still have 4 months until I'm actually cleared off, and then I'll actually be able to... I mean, I'm still doing what I do within the community, helping out, but I think it'll be at a bigger level now. Now that the police officers have shortened, and I guess there's more, I guess, accountability towards actual officials. I think there's more that can actually hopefully get done actually get bypassed. Because I know a big thing that they said to help out with the academy was that we need more community members to be involved. But I'm like, you understand what the community wants is not what you guys are asking us. Because I know in the Southeast, even going back to 2019, I remember when Devon Bailey got killed, we hosted basically a community town hall with Promisely at Relevant Word. We had the original, police chief, was it Chief Ninsky? I think it was. And we had a couple other panelists that were in the community and big activists and churchgoers and things like that. And, you know, I remember they had Carl College kids at the time do a report about the officer involved shooting and showing all the stats. And I remember all Chief Ninsky kept saying, I was like, that's not right. That's false. Like, you guys don't know what you're talking about in your research. But yet, all those facts were proven correct, and yet they didn't want to do anything but just swipe it away.
Right. And it was important. I remember it being like really snowy and really packed, which you don't, as Colorado kids, not necessarily what you see all the time, right?
No, honestly, because a lot of the snow would usually keep people at home and not want to come out.
Not for that event.
No, but for that, I think it was more than what people, I guess, were looking in for themselves. It was more of what can we do for our community and our nation pretty much at that point. And having those conversations, I think, were definitely important. But for CSPD to kind of just bypass it and say, well,
very dismissive.
We're going to do what we want. And if that's what you guys don't like, then that's not, I guess that's your guys' fault. But I remember the Southeast was asking for an independent auditor to help investigate all these shootings and police mishaps. Yeah. And I mean, people are still asking the Southeast for an independent auditor. I know the mayor recently did his listening tours. I know in the Southeast specifically that they were asking for independent auditors for police. Yeah, literally, we were saying, what can we do to have an independent auditor to hold our police accountable, not the sheriffs or the CSPD holding each other accountable for what they do? Because we obviously understand that
if you were to work really
together,
work.
That you would want to make sure that your friend or buddy doesn't get in as much trouble as they should, and they know to be held accountable for. And so I think when looking into that, I mean, a lot of people had great ideas for independent auditors, of having local lawyers here in town to be able to come out of retirement and sit on a board to be able to investigate these officers and show the legal side of what actually needs to be done to hold these officers accountable and actually get true public service in our community and not millions of lawsuits.
Lip service and millions of lawsuits. And can I ask you one more thing about this that's been so striking to me, and I feel like you're a good person to ask because of our conversations, is that we've touched on the two different justice systems, right? Yeah. And like what privilege does. And what's really been tough for me, frankly, is watching this Trump stuff play out in the legal system and him say he's being criminalized by the FBI for his politics, when that's actually what happened to us.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting, too, because some of Trump's rallies in the South in Georgia, he was telling a lot of the black community that he's like, you guys need to understand what they're doing to me, they do to you guys every day, which I get. A lot of people would say, yes, what they're doing is the same thing they do to us every day. But at the same chance, you get your charges dropped like that. Like, he already has 6 charges dropped. Within his cases. And so it's like, and you already paid off $96
million. The money is another privilege.
And that's
for
another
him,
thing too, as well. It's like, you have all these inheritances and all these supporters that will give you that money. We don't have that many supporters. Once we go,
the supporters
they
that
stay
he's stealing
there.
The money from to pay all his legal fees.
Literally.
Yeah.
And I think another thing too with the justice system, I think, is very insane too with is the collateral of people's items just to bail out of jail. Like, I remember when going through that system, a lot of people, I remember one gentleman, he was a little bit younger than me, but he had to take his mom's car to the impound just to get out of jail. And so now he has no transportation. And so I think it's interesting that they ask people to use their house, their car, any item that's theirs.
Again,
of their own
perpetuating the spiral without stable housing, without stable transportation, just making it worse for people.
Yeah, no, it truly is. And it doesn't justify them saying that this is going to make them a better citizen, this is going to help them grow. Because once they get out, they have to start over. There's no, oh, you went to jail, now you can start back where you were already at. You have to literally re-get your Social Security. You have to basically make a new identity for yourself. And I think that's the last thing you should do as a person to be able to, or to even
to have to do,
yeah, to have person. To do as a person, just to remold yourself to for what they want, I guess,
in re-entering way. And into society,
and
right?
I think
and
that's
how
something that's, and they don't even help people with that halfway through the time, you know. And it's,
the deck is stacked against you in a lot of cases when that's where you're at.
It's unfortunate. And like I said, our judicial system is not in the best of terms right now. Even with our DA, Mike Allen, he's prosecuted a lot of people. And I, even with these cases and the protest cases, I know that was
complicit in my prosecution. Yeah. Absolutely. They added another charge when I refused to plead guilty, right? Yeah. So let's up the ante.
Yeah, right? Literally. And it's like you talk about you want to be a servant of a DA, but yet you're charging people out of the wazoo for nothing, just to collect money and to say that we're down DAs and prosecutors, so we need to charge everybody that we can.
Yeah, and charge people because CSPD says so, not necessarily because that would be the thing to do in the name of public safety. Yeah. Like, that's how I feel about my case. I was like, what kind of public safety threat am I?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah, well, and it's also interesting, too, with the court cases of just how involved the CSPD and even the FBI was, like, with this stuff. I remember for the Van
Lant. In your case.
Yeah, for the Van Lant protest, they had an FBI informant that was actually at the housing march there at that event that obviously
April coordinates Rogers with, is who we're talking about.
Yeah, that coordinates with pretty much every single one of us that's involved in this one way or another. She was involved with someone's case. Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting to see that they even had the federal level come down and try to play a role of, hey, just keep quiet like nothing happened and just move on with it and don't say anything. It's just like, well, now that you have the city level denying everything, the federal level's not even going to try to help you out. So it just shows that they play hand in hand together with each other and that there's really no justice either way, federally or locally in the state. And so,
well, goddamn it, we're going to try.
I think with this case with ACLU, I think is a, it's a true start for accountability of a lot of families that missed out on a lot of loved ones that are gone now due to the violence of police, and a lot of hard-earned stuff that they kept for themselves as memories are gone now because they had to use it for the justice system just to get by for whatever they need. And I think we're definitely in a long haul for sure, especially with policing. I think that's a big thing. And I know a lot of people are, depending on how you view the 2A initiative, I think it's truly important to really ask yourself of like, what benefit will this come with of investing into something like this, and knowing that the taxpayers' money is going to have to eventually keep paying more and more money down the road once it's built. And my thing is, he's going to build it. He won't even be in office again, possibly, if he doesn't.
But he'll get his name on that plaque in the building. Oh. not to be too cynical.
Yeah, no, it's not the best. And unfortunately, like you said, he has a Bill Elder behind him, basically coercing him, like, hey, like, if you don't do this for me, then you're going to look like this towards the police
union. This part of the community, yeah. And police unions, as we know, are quite powerful, really. Yeah. And that's, there's not an exemption here in Colorado Springs. Yeah.
And so I think that's something that people definitely need to be aware of, and just hold all your public officials accountable at this point, to be honest, because they all play a part within each other, trying to keep, I guess, their justice system strong in the way they view it, and try to keep people below them as long as possible. And I think that's the last thing that public servants should be doing in the name of what it says, a public servant, and being there for your community. So,
well, and the good news is, really, people can join us in holding their public officials accountable. Because we're here, we're holding it down. We've been doing a lot of work, and we're not going to stop. And so that is a good segue, I think, for the really nice part of this podcast, I like to say, is, like, what's good in your life? Let's talk about what's going on in community. We got a number of groups that you work with and support, and so just let the people know what they need to know.
So I mentioned earlier Neighbors for Education. We're a club, pretty much. We're not a nonprofit, but we're basically advocates of teachers, social workers, students, and people in the community that care for public education. And we go to board meetings and certain retreats that the board holds, and basically hold them accountable for what they're doing to try to take away
public education. There's been a lot of shenanigans
with the CRT bans, the bans of books, and things like that. So we're doing our best to hold them accountable for what they're trying to do to take away for kids' public education. We recently, on March 8th, we had a bingo for books at Holmes Middle School. It was actually a great turnout.
I saw the pictures.
It was a great turnout. And a lot of kids were interested in the books, and just seeing the smiles on kids' faces and the parents being involved and seeing how bingo can be played in more than one way was interesting to me, I thought, honestly, because I haven't played bingo in a long time. So it was pretty fun to kind of see how that could be played, and just seeing the parents say that there's people that are involved in the school, whether they be a teacher or a former student, that actually care for the future
and that want
to be involved. And so we have another one coming up here on the 19th at 5 o'clock at Mann Middle School that we're going to do again coming up. And so hopefully we can get that with another big turnout as we did.
Nice.
We had cool gift baskets too. We had a bunch of Harry Potter stuff. We had the Minions, like the yellow Minions box thing. It's pretty cool. And we had a biography book, actually. So it was really cool about a lot of BIPOC historians and people that are in the Capitol and things like that. And so I thought that was a really good
opening up our perspectives.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, obviously, I'm always at Chinook Center anytime I can be, and helping out and being involved with the food distribution on Sundays, and just donating anything I can of my time to the community that they're helping and that I grew up in, to be able to make it a better place than what it once was. And I think we're still continuing to do the great things with the Chinook Center and people in that community.
The profile keeps growing. That's the idea.
It's slowly going. And
we're telling the story.
No to politics. If people always ask you, would you ever run? No. No. My brother, that's his job. I'm behind the scenes with that. So.
That's totally valid. That's what I love. Yeah. Well, shout out to Chauncey Johnson. Yeah. So we'll get him on Justice with Jax, I know, eventually.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what has been a wonderful thing about you all, is like a lot of times you're like a package deal. Like if you're in community, in community together.
Yeah, he's the political brains. I'm the grassroots brains of it. So we kind of correlate together.
It's a
beautiful
duo.
It works out pretty well. They say we're the positive rebels of the group. That's what a lot of the politicians say, because we like to cause a lot of havoc, but in a good way, I guess.
The good trouble. We embrace the good trouble on this show. Absolutely.
Honestly. And so just any way I can be involved in my community and just helping out and giving back to where I've grown up, I think that's the best thing to do. Or give resources to other people that don't know too much about the area that they're in, that people aren't telling them about, to be able to be involved.
Knowledge is power.
Yeah. And I know the Chinook Center, they're growing a lot of more younger movements. And like, I know the Colorado Springs People's Coalition is a big thing going on right now. I have a couple friends at UCCS that are a part of it now. So it's cool to kind of see the CC and young college kids come together and be able to, you know, stand up and make a difference for what they believe in. And I think that's the start of where we can go.
Super
and like you said, the ACLU lawsuit, I think, is another big thing that's going to help truly hold accountability to public safety and what that public service looks like from an officer, and what other ways outside of policing can we actually justify and actually help people with? Because like I said, housing and mental health are our two biggest things that at least my generation I know that talks about more than anything. And I think that's something that we're lacking, because not to get back on our city again, but our city is trying to do an initiative for our mental health awareness, and there's supposed to be a big summit with the mayor's wife and a couple other mental health institute people to come together to say, what is one way that we can help mental health? And I know there's an initiative that's coming out called 1,000 Block Parties that the mayor and Dave Weinweber chose to do to, I guess, pick to do block parties, which I think is, it's a great idea. But also, I think if you look at the culture dynamic, block parties are totally different depending on where you go. Like
100%.
Within the Southeast, I know block parties are not your gated off communities having
our gates
music.
Don't work no more. They stopped working years ago. That's how it is in my
honestly,
HOA.
Honestly, and so it's very interesting. And so I just tell them with that, it's like, just be very conscious of what you talk about when it comes to block parties and how you're actually going to help mental health. Because it's one thing to have music and jam out and talk to people, because that is one way of helping. But
connecting,
it's also
building community, but not being superficial, right?
Yeah. Like, it's also like actually having those conversations. What ways can we actually build facilities and build actionable items to be able to actually stop what the crisis is going on here in Colorado Springs? And so,
well, so there's no shortage of conversation, but it comes along with action, and that's why we're sitting at this table together. We can do both.
Yeah.
So
and action is in multiple different ways, whether it be podcasts, speaking up at your city council or your state capitol, you protesting outside. There's multiple different ways of making your voice being heard, not just a one way platform. And that's what I like to tell a lot of people. So.
Well said. Okay. Well, I think with that, we'll probably close it out here. Any final thoughts on what's going on in community?
Just keep doing the good fight and keep standing up for what's right, honestly. That's what I
would say. What he said. And so thank you again for joining us with Justice with Jax. And want to say a thanks to Studio 809 Community Podcast, where we're coming from, at the Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs. And so as we sign off, remember to ask yourself two questions. One, who's telling your story? And two, how are you being the change you want to see in the world today? Justice with Jax, signing off.